Blog Talk Radio.
Best-selling and award-winning author of true crime and crime fiction, Yvonne Mason is back with a brand new book, The Pink Canary, a book that delves into the life of a drag queen and a marvelous whodunit. You can find this and all of Yvonne's other works on Amazon.com or find Yvonne Mason on Facebook and Twitter.
You're gonna kill me.
Buy your copy of Pink Canary now.
Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. It is Wednesday night. This is Off the Chain, and I am your host and guest tonight, Yvonne Mason. That was my ad man, Chris Dunham, who I absolutely adore. He does all my voiceover ads, and that was a piece of shameless promotion. It's called The Pink Canary, and yes, it is about a drag queen down in Key West who is a private detective during the day and owns her own drag club at night. And some of the things she and her compatriot get into, well, you'll just have to read it. Now, I'm really excited tonight. Before we get started with the show, I want to do a little bit of housekeeping. The show itself is up to 10,464 listeners. Now, that is over 4,000 on Blog Talk Radio, and then the rest of it on all the podcasts. So if you don't think we're not getting heard, then guess again, because we are heard in the Russian Federation, Singapore, of course, the U.S., Ireland, Germany, Egypt, England, Indonesia, Australia. Australia is our biggest listener on this show on Blog Talk. So thank you guys so much. I appreciate it. Croatia, Canada, Tunisia, New Zealand, Brazil, Taiwan, South Africa, India, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, Portugal, Nigeria, Hungary, Norway, Bulgaria, Malaysia, Vietnam, the Ukraine, Finland, Sweden, Korea, Ecuador. Now, when people say, well, I won't get heard, or well, nobody will hear me, nobody will do this, you know what? You don't want to be on my show bad enough, because I can guarantee you that being on my show pays off. And I'm sure my co-host tonight, the one and only Pretty Man himself, author Frank Bittiger, will agree with me, because we have fun on this show, don't we, Frank?
We have lots of fun on the show. That's why I volunteered to be with you tonight.
Well, I appreciate it. Well, there's so many exciting things. You know about my designing clothing line, right, on Vita.com?
I saw that.
Under my married name, Yvonne Sewell, because I want to keep it separate from everything else I do, just because I'm strange like that. All of those designs on that clothing are from my photography.
That's fantastic, and it's smart to keep it separate. That's good. Keep your brands separate so people know what they're getting when they see a certain name.
Yeah, because it's two different brands. And then you can go over there and buy the clothing line. You can also go on my ViewBug account, which is where my photography is stored, and buy my photography, and they will send it to you on a canvas. Yeah, so I'm excited. And that's under Yvonne Mason. My photography and my books and my show are under Yvonne Mason. Now, tonight, the show is going to be about many things, some of them me, some of them things that I really can get on my soapbox about, and one of them is the stupidity of women. And I'm sorry, ladies, but in general, women are the stupidest creation on earth, especially in the environment we're in now. The group that is trying to set us back 250 years, they now call themselves, Frank, are you ready for this? They're the suffrage movement.
Yeah.
The women's suffrage. Now, come on, what rights do we not have?
Yeah, I think that, don't take this the wrong way. I think that's a slap in the face of those women, if you look back during the actual suffrage movement.
Amen.
Who were spit on and beaten and kicked and arrested and raped in our history to get the right to vote.
It wasn't just the right to vote. It was the right to make decisions
to
on their own.
And own property, to have money.
Right. We have come so blooming far, and these idiot women that don't have sense enough to get out of their own way, that have no respect for themselves, much less the male gender, when they scream, "Don't identify me by my body parts," and then they proceed to wear their body parts or talk about what their body does during that one time of the month and make it sound like it's a wonderful thing. Really? You won't respect, and then you do all this. And then today, oh, ladies and gentlemen, today was the cream of the crop, especially after, and I'm probably going to piss some people off, but when the women in the Congress put on their little white suits and said that they were the new women's suffrage movement, but yet they would not stand and honor the memory of the fallen SEAL's wife, that did it for me. That I'm done with women, mostly not my friends, because my friends understand me, but women in general I'm pretty much done with. But anyway.
No, I didn't see that. That is a little disrespectful. Someone
yeah, they
fighting
would not stand.
Your freedom so you can do these things. You could at least stand for them. I'm sorry.
Right, if you don't want to clap, that's fine, but at least be respectful enough to honor his memory. When in a meeting she was asked if it was all right if they honored his memory, and she said, "I would like that," because this man has worked in the shadows for years. He was a SEAL, for crying out loud.
Right.
Okay. I am going to read this, ladies and gentlemen, because when I read it three times to make sure that I really read it right. Now, I am born and bred in the South, and if my daughter had done this to a man, much less an elderly gentleman, I would have ripped her head off and spit down her throat in front of God and everybody, because this was not only disrespectful and rude, it was the bottom of the barrel as far as human behavior goes. I'm not going to give her name because apparently she is. It's like Frank told me before the show, this woman only wants attention, because this is what she says. So, going to rant a bit now, but it's totally justified because, oh, my God, I'm still shaking from what happened, but I am also so proud of myself. This is what she says, and I quote, "I was about to leave my local grocery shop this morning, and as I walked to the exit, this old white guy literally opened the door for me. Seriously, he stood there holding the door with this creepy smile on his face like he was doing something good. I wanted to spit on him. But I managed to keep my composure, and I looked him square in the face and said, 'Excuse me. But what are you doing is so disrespectful to me. You are assuming, because I look like a woman to you, that I'm too fragile to open my own doors in life. I assure you that I'm strong. Strong enough to stand up to your misogynistic bullshit. And I just stood there staring at him until he stepped away from the door. Pretty sure people in the shop understood because they were smiling. I felt so proud that I had put that arrogant old man in his place. A man opening and holding a door open for a woman is his subconsciously reminding her that all men are in control of a woman's choice. No woman should accept this. If a man holds a door for you, tell him to stop trying to control where women can and cannot go in life." End of quote. Frank, there is so much wrong with that statement. I would like to take that young woman and put her behind the woodshed and tell her a few facts of life.
Well, I don't know the woman, but I'm sorry, you don't. There's no reason to disrespect the elderly, period. Period. There's no reason to disrespect the elderly.
And to call him a misogynistic old man because he was showing good manners and embarrass, I wouldn't even embarrass my worst enemy that way, and I've got a few. But if they
my mother taught us to hold the my mother taught us to hold the door for the person behind us. She didn't specify if it was a man or a woman. So I don't understand what this whole viewpoint
is
from. I don't.
The point of her stupid action is she's a woman, she can do what she wants to do, and no man's going to tell her what to do.
That's completely different than a man being a gentleman and holding the door for you.
She'll learn.
I've had men hold the door for me. I've had women hold the door for me.
And
I
tell
smile
the door.
To politely say thank you, and I go through.
I have held the door open for women, and I have held the door open for men. Say I'm coming out of a door, and there's someone walking up, and they're within range. I will stand there
right.
and hold that door until they enter, because it's the polite thing to do.
As do I. I agree 100% with you. Yes, ma'am.
But this little girl, she needs to go behind the woodshed. I'm sorry. And so behind that piece of garbage that she ranted and thought she was so cute doing it, if she really wants to be in control of what she can and cannot do, good manners would go a long way.
I agree.
I wonder,
good manners
I wonder,
are essential.
I wonder if she's got a grandfather somewhere or a grandmother somewhere or even an elderly parent somewhere that if someone talked to them that way, how she would feel.
That is a good point of view. That's a good thought. I didn't think of that.
So anyway, Monday, when I was in Cocoa being interviewed on a radio show, a friend of mine gave me this, and this plays along with this gesture that this girl did. Your smile is your logo. Your personality is your business card. How you leave others feeling after having an experience with you becomes your trademark. So her trademark, in my opinion, is rudeness, crudeness, and sociably unacceptableness.
I agree with you. I don't think anyone should treat anyone like that. Period. Like we talked about before the show, everyone has their bad day. Everybody's an asshole sometime. But you don't do that. And then to be proud of it?
Yeah.
That's unseemly to me. When you have an elderly gentleman or an elderly gentlewoman holding the door for you, you smile pleasantly, you say thank you, and you pass through. That's
right.
Just, we were brought up, you don't disrespect your elders. And
now,
let
me flip the switch a little bit. I have had young men, some of them as young as 7 or 8 years old, some of them teenagers, who have held the door open for me. Now, these are impressionable young men. If she had made that statement to those young men, it would have destroyed them.
I agree with that. Yes, ma'am. I concur 100% because they probably have a mother and father or some mother and father at home who are teaching them this is what you do for good manners.
Right. So what I say when especially a young person, because it is important for them to understand that, number one, I appreciate the fact that they think enough of another human being to be kind, but I also appreciate the fact that their parental figure, whether it's a mother, father, grandmother, aunt, uncle, brother, sister, whoever taught them this, I always say, someone taught you good manners, and that will carry you far in life.
Right. See, I would probably get yelled at because, as my friends will tell you, when we go out to eat, if I'm with a lady, I say, you first. Well, that, is that being misconstrued as I'm saying you have my permission to eat?
Apparently. To me, it's good manners.
See, I think it's good manners too. And see, that means a lot coming from a woman. See, people would yell at me because I'm a man and I don't have any opinion on it. But, see, I think it's good manners, too.
Well, because you're not saying you have my permission to eat. What you're saying is I will wait until you're ready to eat, and then I will join you.
Correct.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
I didn't think so either.
Your mama raised you right too, my friend.
Well, thank you. I just wonder what some people are thinking. I understand a salient point. I can get behind a salient point. If you literally have a reason, if he held the door for her, and as she was going through, he said something about her ass, I would stand behind her.
But apparently he didn't.
But he didn't.
He was just smiling at her, being a friendly person.
And see, that completely flummoxes me. I don't. You know what I mean?
Because when I hold the door open for people, I look them in the eye and I smile. It's an assessment of, please do me the honor of going ahead.
Right. Yes, absolutely. I just, I don't know.
To me, it's a selfish attitude. It's a
spoiled
and
that make me cringe.
It does, because if we're raising a generation of selfish, self-centered young people, God help us, because our future is bleak.
And see, that's sad to me, because I have younger friends who are in their early, mid, late 20s who don't act like that. You know what I mean? It's not all. It's just, unfortunately, some.
And I go back to the premise, if it was one of their family members, if somebody had spoken that way to, would she still feel like that she should be proud of herself? Because irregardless of what anyone, the way we behave is a reflection on the way that we are raised.
Yes.
So that is a reflection, and it may not be a true reflection. But it is a reflection on the way that she was raised, whether assumably or if it indeed was the way she was raised. She just put a bad reflection on her parental units. Now, maybe
and
they
are. And as
you
said, you're from the South, and I live in Maryland close enough to the South. I understand exactly what you're saying because I hear that from people.
Yes.
When someone, you could be 30, 40, 50 years old, and if you act like that, someone will inevitably turn to the person beside them and say, look how she was raised. Look how he was raised.
Yep. My comment to her is, your mama must be so proud. Bless your heart.
I say that all the time, bless your heart. People still to this day don't get it. They still don't get it.
No, they don't. And ladies and gentlemen, bless your heart in the South can be an insult or a compliment depending on the context of the conversation. And the context of this conversation with this arrogant, self-centered little witch, it's an insult.
It's the highest of insults, yes.
Exactly. Because it's basically saying, so honey child, you don't have sense enough to get in out of the rain because you ain't got no raisin.
That's right.
Bless your heart.
Yep. I love that all the time.
I was raised,
you know, keep teaching by example. Keep leading by example. Keep putting the good example out there because that's the only thing we're going to be able to do.
Well, karma's going to come back and bite her in the ass.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. I'm a big believer in that. Absolutely. You get back more than what you give. Mm-hmm.
Oh, in spades you do.
Whether it be good or bad, yes.
And that's going to segue into my news, and I'm going to let you tell the folks my news, because you know that the reason I do this show, the main reason I do this show, is because I love giving back. I love bringing you on. I love bringing everybody on and letting them do their thing, because we are heard all over the world now, and I am only as successful as I help y'all to be. So it's fun to me to give back and pay it forward. So I'm going to let you spread the news.
is this the good news you posted just a little bit ago?
Yes.
And I said, we can talk about it. Because I think it's awesome. And because I absolutely loved I don't know if it was your first documentary appearance, but it was my first viewing of you when you did was it the Discovery Channel?
It was the Discovery ID. Yeah,
yes.
And it was Most Evil Sexual Deviants.
Because you came off so well in that. And Yvonne gets to do it again. She's been contacted for another documentary with one of her true crime books. Now, you have to forgive me. You have to tell me the name.
It's the same one. It's Silent Scream.
Is it Silent Scream?
Yes,
it is, because of the green cover. Yes.
Yes, it is. In fact, I just talked to the producer a little while ago, and she is excited to get started. I don't know when they're coming to Florida. I don't know when, where, or how. All I know is it's Sirene Producers, and they're out of L.A. And guess where she – now, ladies and gentlemen, y'all know, those of y'all that know me know I'm all over the Internet because I am the network queen. I made the Internet my friend. You're not going to believe – how she contacted me.
Oh, tell.
I am on LinkedIn.
I know. I haven't gotten into that, but you go right ahead. Tell us.
That's where she contacted me from. She messaged me from LinkedIn because everything that I put up from the show and everything that I put up that has to do with any of my brands goes on LinkedIn.
Very nice. Very good.
And she contacted me from LinkedIn. It was in my message box this morning. And I'm going, okay, who are you? Because, you know, you never know if you're getting a truth. So I immediately did my homework, and I found her, and she is a real person, and she is a real studio and a real production company. And it's a go.
Well, congratulations. I was very excited for you. Very, very excited, because it's very deserving, because you're helping get the word out so the memories of these people do not fade.
And some more good news. I don't know if you saw it or not, but next Wednesday night on the show, for the first time in 45 years, one of the victim's families, the Lowe family, whose sister disappeared when she was 13 years old on the way to school, they have agreed to come on the show and tell their story.
Really?
Yes.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Just things are happening. And it's like I told Leroy. Leroy and I have been communicating back and forth ever since the book came out. And I said, Leroy, you need to come on the show. And he got all this encouragement from his brothers and his sister, and they said, yes, it's time we told the story. It's been 45 years. It's time.
Yes.
So I'm excited.
I'm very excited for you.
Things are happening. Things are happening all over the place. Ladies and gentlemen, if y'all want to call in and play with us, you can. The call-in number, my dyslexia kicked in, and Frank called somebody else and talked to him. But
yeah,
the call-in number.
Yeah, we call and try, and I almost had her convinced that she was Yvonne Mason, and we were going to have a show. But, yeah, because I thought you were playing with me. But, okay.
The call-in number
is not embarrassing at all.
But you're pretty, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I am pretty, so it doesn't matter.
And who knows, she might buy one of your books.
Hey, there you go. She might be listening now. Hello. I don't know her name, but hello.
The call-in number is 516-387-1756. Join us, because we're just having a gay old time tonight, because it's going to be about me and Frank tonight, because we can. I had a free night, and I figured I could, and I don't know. Did you hear the show that Ian did with me, where he literally interviewed me for a whole hour?
I did not get to hear it because I was working, and sometimes because I have a very slow internet, the playbacks when I listen to them, they kind of like freeze and stuff. So I didn't get to listen to that one though.
Well, he did a very, very good job.
Fantastic. I almost had a little anxiety here because at the last minute, I thought perhaps I should have prepared questions. And I thought, well, no, she just had an interview. And I thought, we'll just get on there and wing it like we always do.
Well, we do.
You know, have a little profanity, a little dirty talk. It'll all be fine.
Why would you have anxiety? You know we got this.
I know we got this, but, you know, I have issues. I just looked in the mirror and it was like, it's fine.
Well, I'm just going to, this will be my fourth television appearance. Did you know that?
No, because I thought this was number three. Now, Sam, can you list them?
Okay. The first one was one that some French producers came over here. They were doing a documentary on serial killers. This was back in 2008, 2009. And the executive producer's wife had been killed by a serial killer. And so they came over here. His name's Stefan. They came over here. They found me. How, I don't know, but, you know, I'm easy to find. They came over here, and they interviewed me over here. I took them to the two crime scenes. They interviewed my husband, and then it was produced and shown in France. And, of course, it was all done in French.
Why then I didn't see it. That's why I didn't know it.
Yeah, and then we did the one with the ID channel on Most Evil, Sexual
Deviant.
That was
very good.
Thank you. I was rather proud of that one.
And it's
then,
nothing to be proud of, but yours was voted the most nasty out of all three of them.
I know. The reason I was proud that he was voted the worst is because as I watched that show, I had given them a book. They took my book, and then they took some of my interview that they didn't show because it was a two-hour interrogation, and used like a 15-minute clip of it. But some of the things that I had said in my interview, the psychiatrist repeated it verbatim as he was talking about Schaefer.
Oh yeah. He was just. It's horrible to think people out there do these things. But I think in my mindset, I don't want to say you're doing a public service, but in a way you are, because you're taking these tragedies, you're making them known, and hopefully people can learn from it and be more aware.
Yes, because a sociopath can live you can be married to a sociopath and never know it, because he was married to two different women.
Oh my God, his name escapes me now. But he was married to she seemed like a perfectly lovely lady to me, and I believe they even had adult children or higher age teenage children. He was bringing men home on killing them after having sex, killing them and burying them on the estate. Now you probably won't know who it is right away, but you'll think of it later. But you know the one I'm talking about? I mean, so absolutely, pillar of the community.
And everybody thought he was wonderful. Well, the third show, I get this email on a Saturday morning. And it's from Sky TV Productions out of England.
I was going to say, that's British, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes, and they are here in Port St. Lucie and Fort Pierce. They are trying to reach me because they were told by the Martin County Sheriff, who Schaefer had worked for when he was doing all these killings, that I was the expert on Schaefer, so they were trying to reach me. So I thought, okay, this is another scam. But I looked them up. Yeah, they were legit. So I called them, and they were at a hotel in Fort Pierce. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to Fort Pierce, and I told everybody where I was going to be, what hotel, and everything. So in case they really were like sociopaths and I wound up dead, they would know where I was. They could find me. But they were also doing a documentary on killer cops, or cops who kill, is what the name of the show is. One of the cops was Schaefer. So they interviewed me. That was another 2-hour interview. And then they contacted me several more times to get pictures and clarification. And they wanted to send letters to two of the family members, one of them being the Lowe family and the other one Susan Place's family, letting them know that they were releasing this. They don't have to have their permission because it is public record, but letting them know they were releasing this just as a courtesy. But and now this one. So it's four times that I have been interviewed and on television about this horrendous crime. Oh, I lost Frank. Hopefully he will call me back in. Let's see. Are you there?
I am here. You did lose me, but I hit redial immediately. I don't know what happened. I don't know if it was a meteor going overhead or an alien influence.
It was probably one of your ghosts. But anyway.
Probably.
Four times I will be on television because of Schaefer.
I hope to get, and see, that's a huge accomplishment. I hope when I do my slim little volume of a book about my true life ghost experiences, just things that have happened in my life, I would love to go on a reputable show and discuss. Because I'm not here to convince you. I just want to relate my experiences.
There you go.
I'm envious of you. So hopefully in the next year or two, I'll have that little slender volume out. It won't be very big, you know, maybe like...
Well, now, I have a filmmaker that comes on my show who does paranormal filming. His name is Austin Mariotti. He's a young man.
I have had experiences since I was a child. And my cousin Lisa, we're tight as tight. And we had a large number of years separating us. And we just reconnected early last summer. And, in fact, just recently I went up to see her. And we're driving around a small town where she grew up and we're talking. Because we always end up talking about a ghost here and there. And she says, if I see or hear anything now, she said, it still freaks me out. She said, but you're so nonchalant because, she said, you grew up with it even as a small kid. And that's what I talk about in this book. Because I think you and I talked in one of our 500 interviews we've done by now, I think. as a child, I recall, because my first memory I told you about is I'm in playpen, the wooden bars, because I'm 40 years old, so of course, you know, we had the wooden, banister things, and the door comes open, the man in the fireman's suit comes over, and I look up, and he's reaching down to lift me up. I was never in a fire until 9 years ago when my house caught fire, but that's my first memory, so I don't know. I believe in all kinds of cool things, but ghost of my grandfather growing up, who passed away 6 months after I was born, I'm named for him, has been in my life a lot. And you and I talked about how I thought I was a twin who passed away, had a twin who passed, and because his spirit is around constantly, I'm still waiting to get the real psychic. And I don't care what anybody says, I want to have an audience with Teresa Caputo, because I think she's real. And I think she would pick up and be able to tell me or not.
There are people. I have a sixth sense. I can tell people things about themselves that they don't know that I know, that they don't know that they know. And they don't have to open their mouths.
I had a woman tell me one time, and this also makes me believe, because she told me I was not one. She told me I was half of one. And if you think about that, that would be correct if I were twins, because twins are two who come from one.
And so if you feel like there's a piece of you missing, that's
I've
the
always
way
felt that
twins,
way.
And that's the way twins
always,
feel about each other.
And I've always dreamed of him, absolutely. And I even wondered, you know, because I know I told you on the night of my fire, the voice, the man's voice who was behind my shoulder in my left ear who says, just sit down and watch this show. I said, you know, I wonder if that was him.
It could have been.
Because it saved my life. But I'm writing this little slim story of ghosts. So I would love to follow, this is a long segue, but I would love to follow in your footsteps and just get on a program and discuss some things. I mean, I'm not scientific. I'm not all this stuff. I'm not here to convince you. I'm not here for you to say, well, I don't believe you. I'm just here to say, hey, this stuff has happened to me. If you have had something similar happen to you, you might not be crazy. It might be someone communicating with you.
And I believe that we have people that look after us. I think I told you the story about my grandson. When he was little, he lived with me. And then when he went to live with his mother, and he used to tell me about this man all the time. He would tell me there was a man standing at the end of his bed, and he would describe him. Then when he went to live with his mother, a couple of years later, she called me and she said, Mama, I got a problem. And I said, well, what's the problem? She said, well, Cherokee says he sees a man. I said, what are you talking about? She said, I was in the living room with him, and he said, Mama, do you see that man? And she said, what man, son? He says, that man standing over there in that corner. And she said, what man? He said, that man over in that corner. She says, well, describe him. And he did. He says, well, he's wearing a tall black hat and a long black coat. I said, Brandy, that's his angel. I says, he's been looking after Cherokee for years. I said, don't discount him. Tell Cherokee it's okay that man's there to take care of him. And help him stay out of trouble and to protect him. I said, because don't discount him, because we all have that sixth sense about us. I've got three children, and they all have it. My son more than my girls, and my grandchildren have it. My granddaughter knew she was going to die.
I firmly believe we all have it until we're told we don't.
True.
You know what I mean? As kids are growing up, well, that's your imaginary friend. That's possibly an imaginary friend, but, you know, how many more are actually the spirits of another child they're playing with? You know, I mean, yeah, until we're told we don't have it, yeah, I think we all do.
And until we're told we're just imagining things and it's not real, and what happens is we get older, we tend to believe what adults have told us as children, and we don't allow our own psychic to expand and grow, and we cheat ourselves because then we become less than what we should be.
See, I think one of the things my parents and the people around me did, even though they were part of the Brethren religion, it's a Christian religion, but it's the Church of the Brethren, well, on both sides of the family, and we've touched on this briefly before, even though they were in the church, I was never discounted with what I saw. I wasn't ever told, no, you didn't see nothing, you're magic, but I was never validated. It was kind of like that even keel down the road, and I think that helped me greatly. So I didn't think I was nuts when I saw somebody. You know, there's four of us standing here. I only know two of them, and nobody else sees the fourth one. You know, yeah.
And thankfully, you got to hold on to that, because if indeed you are a twin, that twin is probably still hanging around because of unfinished business. Whatever that business is that's not finished, he's still hanging around.
I agree.
Waiting to finish it.
I agree, and we are in the process. I've put out feelers. I had no idea how to do it. The hospital in which I was born is closed down. I'm 40 years old. They didn't put those records on computer. You know they didn't.
Right.
So I have friends putting out feelers because it's, and my cousin Lisa will validate this and verify this. My maternal grandmother had twin sons who passed away, and I believe my paternal grandmother had twins who passed away. Twins run in our family in past generations and present generations. And my mom, in the one photograph of her being pregnant with me, my mom is a very small, petite woman, short, very skinny. My mom is huge. And so I've put out feelers to see if I can get birth records. And I have been cautioned by people who've been in the long-time health profession, you're in the age group, we didn't have ultrasound. We didn't have all this stuff leading up to what we have now to be able to tell sex, to be able to tell for sure how many are in there. And I was also cautioned, if he was in, because I was born brief birth with the umbilical cord torn wrapped around my neck. I was born dead. I was resuscitated. If he was not able to be resuscitated, they would not, in my age group, they would not, I don't want to say taint, but they didn't want to taint the child who lived.
Right.
And so I've been cautioned by several people. This stuff may not be in your record. It just might be healthy baby boy born.
And it's,
I know,
also
there were,
possible, it's also possible that she might have lost the twin early. That
well,
she might have
I
missed
thought of that. I thought of that. However, she says there was no twin, but she will readily admit there was a lot of trouble with, like, the placenta, the afterbirth, or
uh-huh.
what have you. And she said that was painful, and that was like labor itself. And they took it out of the room just as fast as they could when it came out. And I just want to say to her, Mama, you know what that was.
Mm-hmm.
Because they wouldn't do that.
No, and they might not have wanted to tell her that she had lost a child because they were already trying to revive one that was born dead, and the one that came later was probably beyond anything they could do to revive it.
See, I would love to look at my records.
And two, you got to think also too, Frank, that if this child was deformed in some way, they
yes.
wouldn't have wanted her to know.
And you, being of your age, having children in the generation you had them in, you know these things I'm saying are true from a medical standpoint, especially
yes.
in a smaller town.
Yes.
And I know going into it, if we do find the records, this might not be mentioned. But that doesn't discount the fact that it could be possible.
And it's highly probable
yeah.
based on
and
family
I think
history.
It is. Correct. Because at one point, because there's been cases in my family where, like you said, I suspect people have miscarried one early on because the doctors will be told it's possible you're having twins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's possible you have, and this is more than one person being told this. So, and they, yeah. So I think it's highly possible he was a reality.
So don't discount it. Just keep looking. And when you least expect it, you'll find an answer.
Oh, I already have the answer. I just would like, and I know this sounds odd coming from someone especially like myself, but I also have a very scientific slant in my head, so I have to have documentation.
Right.
I already know the answer, but I would like to have documentation to verify it.
And that makes perfect sense, because then that puts the stamp of authenticity, that word that I can't pronounce tonight because I've gone brain stupid. It makes it authentic.
That's true. And because even when I would discuss this with my one cousin who passed away, she thought she was having twins, and she was pretty sure she miscarried one early on, but not like real early on, like about midway.
Right.
And I said, well, you know, we have the history in our family, so it's not like I'm just pulling this out of thin air going, I think I was twins.
And the fact that you feel that half of a person syndrome, if you speak to any twin, they will tell you they know the time of day, they know the hour, they know the second when something happens to their twin.
Oh, I know. I've seen the studies where they've been adopted separately, and they come together, and they either have the same first name or middle name. They're wearing the same clothes, same jobs. Oh, yeah.
Same mannerisms. And they might be mirror images of each other. One of them might be right-handed where the other one's left-handed.
Correct.
So I agree with you. I definitely agree.
If I ever know, you'll get a phone call one of these days going, I got the record. Guess what?
then we'll have to do a whole new different show on you and your twin. We need to give your twin it.
Yes.
Well, we need to give your twin a name.
Well, I think he would have been named Freddie. And I'll tell you why. Because people all my life, even people I've known over 20 years or more, they'll just out of their mouth when they holler for me, they'll yell for Freddie instead of Frankie. And it's like, and all these different people do it. And I'm like, I think that's
interesting.
I think it's very interesting. I think he would have been Freddie. Yeah.
I think you're right. I think it's a sign.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why I wrote at the beginning of my book. I wrote, you know, I don't have the records. The records might not show this, but I believe this and signs point to it. And I think being, you know, quote unquote, born dead, that I think that gives you a, because my maternal grandmother and my paternal grandmother used to always tell me, you know, you can see. And then you run across, I know you're big into different mythologies. And I know, you know, because we said before, allegedly you never come back. You always have one foot on the other side. And my friend Nancy Stallings, who she had what they referred to as the Amityville in Baltimore, Maryland. She was on a haunting. And she and her husband married. They each had their own children. They had children together, and they lived 10 years in a haunted house. And they went on to be researchers and all these things. And she knew Hans Holzer and all these other people, and he wrote the introduction for her biography. And she always told me, she said, I want you to promise me, is what she always said, you have to promise me you don't go to these places. If people want you to go to that prison, she's talking about over in Pennsylvania, was it Moundsville, West Virginia Penitentiary, and all these different insane asylums, she's like, you don't go. She always says to me, you promise me you don't go. You're too sensitive for those places.
Yeah, they would eat you alive.
I took that in with much credence coming from someone like her, because she says, you're very open, she says, I don't want the wrong thing to get a hold of you. And I said,
exactly.
Well, I appreciate that greatly. But she told me she believed I was a twin. Absolutely.
So you get a hold of Austin. He's on my Facebook page. He's the only Austin.
Yeah, if you feel free to make an introduction.
Okay.
I don't know if it won't be this year I do the book, but I hope to have it for next year. But I mean, we might be able to work something out. We might be able to do like a little documentary kind of. We've had some very intriguing stories, and a lot of them have like someone witnessing it. So it could, you know.
Nice.
That's
and of
cool.
course, we're going to launch the book on the show.
Oh, of course we will. Oh, speaking of which, I just sent off a book to editing. So hopefully, at some point this year, one book will come out at least.
Well, it's about time.
Well, I just had one last year. How many more a year do you want?
Well, you should at least put out two.
I know, but I'm lazy. If I didn't have to work, I would focus more on the writing. But it's such a joy for me right now that I don't taint it. If I have a hard day or a long day, I don't come home and I come home and I don't write. It's a joy for me. But go ahead. I've been getting. Yeah, I'm still here. I've been getting some people asking me about the next Scaraby book. So I'm like, finally, you might get number four. It's been written for a long time. If I feel like it, you might get number four.
Now you sound like R.R. Martin. If I feel like it, I'll finish the last book in Game of Thrones. Well, we've been waiting 2 blooming years.
Well, you got to understand, Shadows Amongst the Moonlight, a very traumatic book for me. It was started at the time of my big fire, It was written during the 10 months or so where I was, I say homeless, but I don't want to offend my sister and brother-in-law because I lived with them. I say homeless and my home was gone, but you know what I mean.
Right.
And I said, I've held it back because I said, I don't even want to revisit it because I felt that was going into the past and that very traumatic year and all that. And I thought, no, you're going to separate this book out enough. Like you said earlier in the program, enough years have passed. We're going to see if you got a good story with this book and we'll see what people think.
And to think about this, Frank, the fire, it doesn't define you. It was just a moment in time. And
oh, true.
You got out.
Absolutely.
Sadly, you lost your animals, which is always painful. But
exactly.
You survived. You survived.
Oh, absolutely.
So
I'm not traumatized by it.
Right. So if nothing else, as a tribute to them, dedicate the book to them.
I do have a big list of animals who passed away in the front of the book who touched
dedicate
my life.
Dedicate the book to them.
And I felt it. I'm not traumatized by the fire because I don't believe it. I believe I've worked past that, worked through it. I associate this book with the bad time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Because it's called a trigger. It's a symptom of PTSD. It's called a trigger. And
I can understand that when you're in a house that's on flames. I understand that. I do.
Because when there is a traumatic event in one's life, something else can happen or a thought or a memory, and that traumatic event comes back to the forefront of the mind. It doesn't mean that you live with it every day. It just means that there are triggers. I mean, good grief, I lived in an abusive relationship for 18 years, and I've been out of that relationship for well over 20, but there are still moments that the triggers hit, and I have to say, wait a minute, that was just a defining moment in my life. It doesn't define who I am. I am stronger, better, and moved on from that. But it still will come to the forefront for that moment. But
It does, because you're a writer. You know how much time you're involved, even after you finish, you think the last draft when you go through. You still have to go through it. Do you know how much time is involved with that? And I was just concerned if I spent all that time with it, since I associated it with the fire and that loss and what could have happened. I mean, what happened was bad enough, but what could have happened and me associating it with that, I just thought, I don't want to get sucked into that frame of mind. But I think I can do it.
I know you can, because, see, remember, you and I talk about coulda, woulda, shoulda, and that coulda word, you could have been killed, but you weren't. So it didn't happen.
Right, absolutely. But you know, as strong as we are as a species, as humans, it's like I tell people, because I'm a night owl and I use this as an example, I said, you could be very strong. You can know this is not going to affect you. But sometimes at 3:30 in the morning when you're all alone and you're sitting there at your desk and it's all dark outside, it's all quiet, sometimes that shit creeps like shadows into your mind and starts to mess with you.
And then you know what I do when it starts messing with me?
What do you do?
I stare it square in the face and say, you can't hurt me. Because when I was writing Silent Scream, and we were talking about things being with us, I said I didn't sleep the whole 9 months I wrote that book. And one night I'd finally gone to sleep.
I can understand that.
Well, and I finally went to sleep. And about 30 minutes later, I sat straight up in bed because this voice said, and I knew the voice. Because I had watched his videos enough, I knew his voice. I sat straight up in bed, and this voice says, I'm going to kill you. And I said, no, you're not. You're dead. You can't hurt me. I am going to hurt you because I am going to keep your crime out there and keep my victims alive so that you are not vilified. Because all over the Internet, And this is true with any serial killer. They make them the hero. Oh, well, they
yes.
were mistreated as a child. They couldn't help themselves. No, they're evil. And I in my mind, because my husband's sound asleep, if I'm awake talking, he's going to think I've lost my mind and have me committed. But I'm saying, you can't hurt me, but I can hurt you because you hurt my victims. They were forgotten. They're not going to be forgotten again.
Seriously?
And I never heard the voice
mine's
again.
A made-up story. Yours is real. Yeah, mine's
yeah.
made up. Yours is real. Yours is scarier.
Yeah, truth is stranger than fiction. Do you know that our hour's almost up?
Oh, of course it is, because we need to get us a two-hour show one night, and we'll be good.
We'll do that. We will do that. We'll do a complete, because we're at like 4 minutes before they tell us we have to go bye-bye. So, ladies and gentlemen, tomorrow night, Alexander, I hope I can get his name right, Beresford is going to be my guest. He is a filmmaker. He is also an author. He lives part-time in, he grew up in Los Angeles, lived part-time in Maryland and part-time in Dallas. Now he lives in South Florida, and occasionally he hops over to Derbyshire, England, where he commutes with, Frank, are you ready for this? Ghost.
I want
to
hear. Tell him if he ever wants to make a film, you know a guy who wrote a couple of ghost stories.
Well, I want you to hook up with him, and if you can, listen to the show tomorrow night, because this guy's
yes.
going to be interesting. And hook up with him, because
yeah,
he's a filmmaker.
Yeah, introduce him into Austin. Yeah.
Yeah. And Because
I think one of my ghost stories would lend itself to do a really creepy movie like The Woman in Black. I really think it would.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So, we've got like 2.5 minutes. You and I have talked about this before about dreamers, and people have asked me, well, how do you do what you do? And would you agree with me that we don't even think about it anymore? We just do it because it's who we are, and it's become a part of what
it's
of
true.
Who we are.
It's,
and if we don't
true.
Do it,
it's
we go
almost,
crazy.
Yes. It's almost like you hear a whisper in your head. And it's like, who was I telling? I was so weirded out writing one of my books because apparently the main character has a best friend now, and the best friend's a redhead. He's a ginger. And then a couple more chapters in, apparently he's a cop. And I'm like, wait, where is this coming from? Yep, we're dreamers. Oh, yes, absolutely.
And ladies and gentlemen, if we didn't have dreamers, our civilization as we know it would not exist, because it's dreamers that created automobiles, created the paintings, created the music, created the books, created the houses we lived in, created technology, sent us to the moon. So, and dreamers don't get their dreams real by sitting on their hands and saying, like Frank and I were talking about, shoulda, woulda, coulda, or one day. Because at the end of the day, that one day, you're going to be on your deathbed and someone's going to say, what are your regrets?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not living.
Exactly.
I'm not living. I refuse. I'm not going to live with regrets. I'm going to do wherever my dreams lead. Today, think about it, ladies and gentlemen. Writing, bounty hunting, college degree, the radio show, my own design line and clothing, my photographs, being on four television shows. Four, ladies and gentlemen. Most people dream, like Frank says, to be on one.
Absolutely.
So you own your dream. It is yours, and no one can steal it without your permission. Now, if you give someone the permission to steal it, shame on you. Because that tells me that dream's not really real.
And don't let anybody take it away from you. Oh,
absolutely.
Oh, you went to number 17 on Amazon. You didn't go to number one. Hey, how many of your books even went on? How many did you even write? You know what I mean?
Right.
Don't
so
let them
every,
take
every,
it.
Every day is an accomplishment. So if you're 689 out of a million in book sales, you're 689 out of a million. How many of your friends can say they're 689 out of a million? Do not discount
right.
yourself, because you are important.
Right. It's
so,
success.
Frank, thank you, my love, for being
thank
my host.
Thank you.
Guest
always.
And, again. And remember, ladies and gentlemen, he is
there.
Pretty. He is pretty.
I am pretty. I didn't say that.
And we love him.
So
until tomorrow night at 8 o'clock Eastern, live, love, laugh a lot, and join us at 8 o'clock on Off the Chain. This is Yvonne Mason saying good night. Okay, now we're off the air. That hour went by too fast.
It does go by too fast. We just get to chatting about nothing. Well, wait, it's not nothing, but you know what I mean. We have a good old time.
We do. You're going to have to come.
Please,
why don't you come on the show? Come on the show and co-host this show with Alexander with me tomorrow night.
Well, I can't promise you because I don't know what time I get off work.
Well, if you get off, even if you get off in the middle of the show, hop on the show.
I'll give you a call, yes, because I'll make sure, see what time I get out tomorrow, because I work both my jobs tomorrow. I work in the office, and then I work in the hair salon. So that can be a long day. But, yeah, I would love to. That way you could introduce me to one of these gentlemen, because I have had that book, Into the Mirror Black, not optioned, but, like, be interested in. Like Tom Futrell will tell you, there were two small studios that when he was working with me, who were interested and put a hold. I think he said it was a hold or something, and they ended up passing on it. I just think that Into the Mirror Black and Raven House would make some creepy-ass little movies. Not a lot of sets, not a lot of actors. I think we have a good Woman in Black type creepy old film.
It's a noir type. Raven House is a noir type book.
Well, thank you. Some people don't like it at all. But
well, as I'm reading it, and it's running in black and white in my head. It's not running in
good.
Color.
Good, because that's what a lot of... Now, see, here's the thing about me, and I don't want to sound conceited.
Oh, come on, conceited.
If you get what I'm saying, you love it. If you don't, you don't like it. It's like that short story Alan Draven had in his collection, and it was the last story in the collection. And Blood of the Muse, we've talked about before, the big website, said it was not a gothic horror book story. It had no place in that collection, but it was the best one. And that's the quote that's on Raven House. And it's like, and another big critic, she said it was her favorite book in the story until she got to the end. And I'm like, you didn't get it. The whole story is like an Aesop's fable allegory. He didn't kill the monster didn't kill the guy. There's a reason for it. If you got it, you loved it. If you didn't get it, you hated it. And Raven House, I say that at the end of it in my author's note. It thrills me that you talk about it like that, because I said it's my nod to the old English ghost story.
Well, and you also have to read Raven House with an open mind, because the guy is actually fighting the monster within himself.
Oh, they're both fighting, because that's why I say in my author's note, I said you might see them again. You might not. I might, because a lot of the old English stories, they didn't wrap everything up neatly. It was to your imagination.
There you go.
So it's like,
Well, my friend, thank you again.
Yes.
I had
thank
so
you.
Much fun. I don't know where the hour went. It just flew by, as usual.
Hopefully we're educating people.
That true. And what I'm going to do, like I always do, is I'm going to tag you with the link when I post it. And I'll tag you in all the archives. And I want you to use this to promote yourself, to market yourself, to brand yourself.
Oh, I do. I share them because it helps with the sales. And you feel free to mention me to Austin and this other gentleman, because, you know, they might be intrigued and want to try to do something.
Anything is possible and all is highly probable. And we put it out there into the universe. And I have found that when you say things out loud and they go out into the universe, things happen.
I say it every night before bed, what I want. I do, literally.
Because if you keep it inside of you, nobody knows. And I do want to use you more. I do want to use you more as a guest host.
Wonderful.
because sometimes when we do this back and forth with our guests, they love it because they're the like a ping pong ball in the and they're the center of attention. So what I'll do is I'm booked almost through July now. Can you believe that?
That's good. That's amazing.
It just keeps growing. And I found a way to do video.
Oh, you're talking? Yeah, interview. I saw that.
Yes, I'm still. In fact, I'm going to use you as my guinea pig.
See if I have a. I think I have a camera on this old laptop. Well,
you'll
have to see what
I
have to download. Oh, you don't have to.
You should have a camera on your laptop.
That's what I'm saying. I think I'd have a camera on the laptop. I might have to download a compatible program to be with you, like Skype or something. But yeah.
No, I don't think so.
No.
That's what we're gonna play with.
Okay. Cool.
And if you have to, the name of the program is Be Live, BELIVE.
Okay.
And I think all I have to do is plug you in, but I'm not sure. That's why I want to use you as a guinea pig.
Yeah, we might have to have me download. I bet I have to download it, too.
Because well, we'll
it might
see.
Work on the same principles of Skype. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
might.
And we'll do a test show on that.
That was very cool.
I was trying
to
figure out who I could use as a guinea pig, and since you're so pretty, that'll work fine.
Well, exactly. Exactly. I'll even dress up for you, babe.
Oh, good Lord, heaven help us.
I'll put
all
on
right,
nice
my darling.
All right, Jim, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. And if you get home in time tomorrow night, call into the show.
Absolutely. I'll make myself a note, and that way you can be like, this is the crazy guy I wanted to introduce you to.
All right, darling.
Absolutely.
Talk to you later.
Thank you, darling.
Good.
Bye.
Good night.